ready. It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Wayne's Comics at comicbook.com turns 65, so I'm glad you're here to listen. This week I have a wonderful interview with Christos Gage, one of my favorite writers in comics these days. He does Avengers Academy, Sunset, The First X-Men, and a host of other good things that I really enjoy. We have a fun time talking about comics and his creations, and unfortunately the end of Avengers Academy, which became apparent in the last couple of weeks. So you won't want to miss that interview. Then I review this week's comics, followed by news and previews with Gianluca Glaser. There's a lot to get to, so let's get to it. I'm talking today with Christos Gage, the writer of many good things, including Avengers Academy, The First X-Men, and Sunset. That's the book. Yeah, I really enjoyed all of those. How are you doing today, Christos?
Doing all right. How about yourself?
Good. Why don't we start off with the bad news? Of course, we found out recently that Avengers Academy is going to end with number 39, and I just wanted to say that has been my very favorite book from Marvel, the ongoing titles. So I really feel a huge loss hearing that happen. So
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. I'm disappointed to see it end as well, but at the same time, what we had was a book with mostly new characters and a few, not exactly marquee Avengers, and it managed to last for 40 issues, including the point one issue. Mm-hmm. So in this market, I mean, when you have established properties like Defenders ends after 12 issues, the last series of Guardians of the Galaxy 25 issues, Nova 25 issues, even books featuring established characters like that, they just don't last that long nowadays. And for a book with mostly new characters to last as long as it did, it's a testament to the loyalty of the readers and the retailers and the support we had for a very long time. So, you know, like you, I'm disappointed to see it end. I would have loved to write it forever, but I'm also really happy that it lasted as long as it did and that we got the support that we did. And you can't say too much about what comes after Avengers Academy, but The characters will still be around. I'm not going to be writing them, but the characters will still be around in the Marvel Universe. So, there's specific plans for them. So that's a positive thing as well, because when Mike McCone and I created these characters, I mean, obviously you create characters for a company like Marvel. You don't do it so that, you know, when you're done, they fade away into obscurity. You do it because you hope that they'll become a part of the Marvel Universe. And, hopefully that's what'll happen.
Well, one of the things I really enjoy about your writing is the setup of characters and making them really live and breathe. I really felt like I knew these characters, including Hank Pym, who's been around for decades, but I really thought I understood him more reading Avengers Academy than I did in all the books that I'd read before about him, and that's really saying something in my opinion.
Well, I appreciate that. I mean, I have to give a lot of credit to Dan Slott, who sort of, in Mighty Avengers, started him on that journey of reestablishing him as a preeminent founding Avenger and a major character in the Marvel Universe. He's one of the earliest Silver Age Marvel heroes, and he is one of the smartest people in the Marvel Universe, and he's a classic Avenger. But for the longest time, ever since the early 80s, where they did that storyline where he had a nervous breakdown and hit his wife, the Wasp, and that led to their divorce and his resignation as an Avenger. And for a long time, that was just the entire definition of the character. That's all people seem to be able to focus on. And I think that in Mighty Avengers and the Initiative, Dan did a great job in moving him away from that and saying, okay, you know, we're not going to pretend that never happened, but a lot of people do very bad things that they regret and try to make amends for, and that's what's happened here, and let's move forward. So that's what Dan started to do, and I sort of picked up the baton at Avengers Academy and ran with it, and I wanted to take the step of turning him back into Giant Man for a variety of reasons. When I felt like it was, you know, sort of him coming full circle and going back to being the hero that he was in the early days of the Avengers. He was Ant-Man in the first issue, but by the second issue, he was Giant-Man. Mm-hmm. And part of it is just artists love drawing Giant-Man. I mean, They just love to draw him. He's this iconic figure, the great visual powers. He grows gigantic, and Mike McCone did a great redesign of his costume, which incorporates most of the classic elements, but it has a couple new wrinkles and fairly prominent antenna, so it shows that he's still got the Ant-Man powers. And it's just I'm really glad that people seem to be liking Hank Pym, and now he's in Secret Avengers as well, and he'll continue to be around in the Avengers books from what I understand. So I was just really privileged to be a part of that because he's a great character.
The only thing I can't understand about the book is why this book didn't sell so much better. I mean, it reminded me in some ways of the original X-Men and the Teen Titans, you know, the new Teen Titans, where you had teen characters, and several of them are new, and you do have a mix of classic and new characters. Mm-hmm. And in the past, that's always been a way to have a successful book.
You know, it's just a really tough market. I mean, you've got the recession going on. You've got a lot of great books out there to choose from, and, you know, it's tougher than it's ever been. I mean, the book did sell consistently, but usually at a fairly low level. And I think the threshold for a book getting canceled is, you know, around 20,000 nowadays. And we were sort of hovering around 22, 23, 21. I know that the Avengers versus X-Men crossover, it went up by like a factor of like 30%, which was great. But, you know, usually these things don't last. So I think, I mean, that's one of the reasons, you know, that I was sort of waiting for the call saying this book has been canceled, you know. And when they said to me, you know, we actually want to keep these characters and this concept around, I was very happy because it shows that Marvel believes in the characters and the concept. And so that's why I know some people are very disappointed and upset, but I can't get too upset because everyone's just been really terrific about it. And it's hard these days. Nowadays, people, they can only afford to buy so many books, and there tends to be a gravitation towards books that are perceived to quote unquote matter. And by that, I mean, have the most wide ranging effect on the fictional universe as possible. And usually that's going to be books with big ticket characters like Avengers or New Avengers or, you know, Amazing Spider-Man. And that's the way it's going to be. A book like this was never going to sell 80,000 copies, and it is what it is. So the readership we did have was very dedicated and very passionate, and everyone's been very nice reaching out to me and saying how much they enjoyed the book. So I'm very grateful for that. If anything, I feel bad that I wasn't able to write a book that sold a lot better so it could have stuck around longer. But who's to know? Who, you know, with Marvel now, I mean, even if it had been selling 50,000 copies, maybe they would have changed it anyway. I don't know. I just know that the feeling was, sales being where they were before AVX started, that if some change wasn't made in some way, that the book wouldn't survive for too much longer. So, you know, it kind of had to happen. And I know that people are sad. They're going to miss it. But hopefully they'll continue to follow the characters. And hopefully they'll continue to follow my work where that goes.
Definitely. Now, I kind of worried when the storyline became called Final Exam, and I thought, oh, I said, we must be coming towards the end. And so I wasn't terribly surprised, but I was disappointed when I heard about it. But I'm grateful that Marvel gave you the opportunity to write with Neil Adams doing the first X-Men. Do you want to talk a little bit about how that came to be?
Yeah, that was a really great opportunity for me. I was approached by Nick Lowe, the X-Men group editor, and Axel Alonso, the editor-in-chief at Marvel. And they said to me, you know, we've got this opportunity. Would you be interested in working with Neil Adams? And I was like, of course. You know, I mean, as a writer, you have dream lists of artists you'd love to work with, you know, and mine's like, I've been lucky enough to work with a lot of my dream artists, you know, from Mike McCone to Chris Samnee to a number of people. But then you've got like the people that you grew up with as a kid, and you're like, oh, wouldn't it be cool to work with George Perez? You know, of course, I was exclusive to Marvel at the time. For the past couple of years, he's been exclusive to DC for it. So obviously that wasn't going to happen, but you have these dream collaborations. And I have to say, Neil Adams wasn't even on the list because the idea of working with Neil Adams was just so out there. You know, I was like, well, that would never happen. You know, it's sort of like getting to play football with Joe Montana. You know what I mean?
Right.
So when they approached me, I was like, yeah, of course I'll do, you know, basically whatever it is, I'll do it. And Neil had approached them with this idea for a story that takes place in the time before the X-Men were formed, before the Silver Age of Marvel, in which Wolverine, who of course is a very old character because of his healing factor, he lives a long time. Mm-hmm. Mutants are just starting to emerge, and he sees the government taking them and experimenting on them and using them. And he's been used a lot himself in the past, and he tries to do something and take a stand, you know, help them, train them, stand up for themselves, and he recruits Sabretooth, who's a mercenary he's worked with before, and Sabretooth's a little less altruistic, and he does it for the money Wolverine's paying him. But anyway, so Neil had this idea to tell this story and essentially how things were shaped, because as Neil put it, he said, when I was going back recently, Neil said, and reading the early issues of the Lee Kirby X-Men, and he said, there's a lot of stuff that already is established at that point. Professor X has this school, and he's rich, and he's in a wheelchair, and there's this FBI agent character, Fred Duncan, who he's working with, and how'd that happen? You know, what's the backstory there, and how did Charles Xavier get to this point in his life? What would make a man who, visually speaking, can pass for a human being stick his neck out there and say, I'm going to bring mutants together? And so it's sort of one of these looking into the past type of stories, and I think it's very cool. And it's been interesting because some people are really digging it, and then some people are saying, well, I don't like this sight unseen. I don't like the concept because it undermines Professor Xavier. And my feeling on that is, well, you know, I can sort of see that standpoint, but by the same token, what was he like when he was 17, 18 years old? You know, we know he was a genius. We know he was at Oxford already. Mm-hmm. But how many 18-year-olds do you know who are ready to unite a people and basically become their Moses? Mm-hmm. Not too many. So I thought it was a very interesting opportunity to see how some of the characters we know as iconic became those versions of those people. Mm-hmm. So it's been really cool. I've written all 5 issues off of Neil's plot. It's been a great collaboration. Neil did the plot. I would write the scripts, and then Neil would provide notes on the scripts. And so it was a very collaborative experience. And Neil, of course, draws this beautiful classic Neil Adams looking art. And the great thing about Neil is I can see why he's a legend, because I'm being very much the fanboy. And I'm like, Neil, I want you to draw Magneto and Sentinels. And I actually, issue 2 comes out pretty soon. I actually got the Manphibian in there,
which is
an obscure horror character that Neil just drew on a cover once in the 70s. So I'm like wanting him to draw all this class stuff. He's like, okay, that's fine. But I want to also create something new. And he's created these really interesting and cool new characters that Wolverine brings together. And that's why he's a legend, because he's always blazing new trails. So, you know, I hope people like it. I hope that when it's done, people will look at it as a whole and say, okay, now I get it. Now I see how the characters went from where we see them in issue 1 to how they started on the road to becoming the characters we know and love them as. So,
Now, one of the things I'm really interested in this book is that oftentimes with the X-Men, there are decades of continuity that one needs to know in order to be able to get what's happening in all the books. But my understanding is you're doing this differently. This is kind of set up in a way that you don't necessarily have to understand all the X-Men history to be able to enjoy the comic.
Yeah, absolutely. Part of that is natural because there isn't as much history at the time period we're telling the story in. And part of it is intentional. We wanted it to be a sort of thing that people who might only be familiar with the characters tangentially from the movies or video games or cartoons or whatever could pick it up and enjoy the story without having to have a degree in X-Men history. Mm-hmm. So that's been part of the fun of the project. And I know that there are a lot of fans of Neil Adams from the old days who may not have read modern comics in 10, 20 years, but they want to check this out. And we wanted to make sure that they could enjoy the story as well. So yeah, I mean, that's the whole idea, that it's the story that you can read and enjoy on your own. But at the same token, I mean, one of the reasons I was brought in is because I know the history very well. And I was brought in to, in part, utilize those elements in the history like Fred Duncan and Bolivar Trask, the creator of the Sentinels, and try to put together some of those pieces, not in a way where people are like, wait, what does this mean? I have to know what this means to understand the story. But in a way that longtime fans will say, oh, okay, I see where that is. Like in issue 1, we see Professor Xavier and his fiancée, Maura McTaggart, who at the time was Maura Kinross, and they're talking about his inviting his brother to the wedding, and longtime fans will know that that's the Juggernaut before he was the Juggernaut, you know.
Right.
And, you know, the cool thing is this is also an opportunity to establish some things. Like, one of the things that didn't work for me in Professor Xavier's history is he's at Oxford, he's engaged to Maura, and basically, because her old boyfriend essentially calls him a wuss, he's like, well, no, I'll prove to you I'm not. And he joins the army. Mm. And I'm like, okay, that doesn't make any sense.
No,
I mean, he's already engaged to her. What's he got to prove? He's a genius. You know, what has he got to prove? He wouldn't join the army for that reason. So we made it a little bit more that he's confronted by Wolverine, who says, I want you to join me. He's like, no, I don't want any part of what you're doing. You're insane. And then he's like, okay, people might know what I am, and I have to essentially take steps to protect myself. So he joins the army in part to get access to people who can essentially scrub his record clean, take out any references to him being a mutant or anything unusual. So there's stuff like that. There's continuity stuff for people who want to enjoy it. Like in issue 3, our guys run across Submariner, who I like call Hobo Submariner, because at the time he lost his memory and he's living on the streets of New York. Yeah. You know, that's a bit of continuity there. So there is that in there, but at the same time, like you pointed out, the whole idea is that this is a self-contained story that people can read and enjoy, whether they've been reading the X-Men for 50 years or they've never read one.
Well, you never know. I mean, this might get more people to buy the books that are coming out now. If they like what they're reading, they can actually go on and get into some of the current books.
Well, sure. I mean, I remember my first exposure to I have an issue of X-Men 107 that I read, that I bought when I was 5 years old. But my first real exposure when I started following it was right after the death of Phoenix. It was issue 139. And there's all this reference to this stuff that happened in the past. But then there's this Wendigo storyline going on that I could follow and understand because it was the immediate storyline. But all the references of the past made me go, hey, I'm curious about this. I want to know more about what's going on. So I tried to pick up back issues. I mean, back then your options were much more limited. So hopefully that'll be the case.
Well, you know, prequels are a grand tradition. I mean, we've got all kinds of storytelling going on, telling how things came to be, which, by the way, is something I really like. I always like to know how things came, got the way they are.
Totally.
So for me, I like having an idea as to how we got to that place. If Professor X was the ultimate mutant all the time, I'd be a little suspicious, actually. So
yeah, that's the whole idea, yeah.
Okay, so how many issues of the first X-Men are there going to be?
There's going to be 5. Issue 1 has already come out. Issue 2 comes out, I would guess, in a couple of weeks or so. I just saw the lettered, what do you call it, the composite. So it shouldn't be long at all. I think it's already gone to the printer. And then, it's up to issue 5.
Now, of course, we want people to buy the individual issues. But when Neil Adams and you are involved, I want to be able to have a collected edition to keep later on. Is there word about a hardcover or softcover coming up once all the issues have come out?
I'm sure there will be a collection. I don't know any specifics about what format it'll be or anything like that, but I agree with you. I want to have a permanent edition.
I'll bet, yeah. It must be funny to call Neil Adams Neil, you know, all the time.
It is. It's crazy. I mean, I remember being a kid and reading those Treasury editions that were about as big as I was, like Superman versus Muhammad Ali and all that stuff. It's just crazy to be working with someone like that whose work, to me, has always been there and always embodied what awesome comics look like.
You should get him to draw you as a comic character. That's what I would, if it was me, that's what I would do.
That is a waste of Neil's drawing ability.
Okay. Well, let's move on to Sunset, which is another book that you've done that I really enjoyed. Now, this one actually came out as a hardcover, and it's a crime noir story, and it's done in black and white. So it's a little different from the usual fare that's coming out today, but I really liked the book. I enjoyed it a lot. Again, the characters are very strong. I really thought the main character, Nick Bellamy, as an enforcer, would be kind of a dull guy, but he's actually quite interesting as the story unfolds. And, of course, he's got family involvements and things like that. I love that the artist drew the guy as Jack Palance, which I got a huge kick out of when I saw his likeness in there. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? How did that come to be, and are there going to be more Sunset coming out?
Well, there's no immediate plans for more. If enough people buy this one and ask for more, who could say? I'd love to do a prequel or a sequel or something. But how it came to be is I'm a big fan of crime noir, and a lot of that is set in times of the past, 50s, the post-war era, maybe the 70s. But beyond that, it's almost as if the modern era is too clean and connected and, you know, whatever for that to really work. But so my thinking was, well, what if you take a character from that era and tell a noir story with him in the present day as an old guy? And part of the inspiration came from the fact that more and more you're hearing about people who are what we would consider elderly, but they're doing this amazing stuff. You know, like there's an 86-year-old gymnast you can see on YouTube, and she does this gymnastics routine that I couldn't have done when I was 17. You hear about older guys fighting off muggers or an 80-year-old rodeo cowboy. So, of course, there's always been people like Jack LaLanne who are amazing, but they were sort of few and far between. And more you're hearing about these people who are making this a regular thing. So I thought to myself, well, why not have a guy who's in his 70s but can still kick ass? And it went from there.
it's just a great story. I really enjoyed it. It ends extremely well. I love the way that the whole thing kind of comes to a head towards the end. So it keeps me going along. I kept waiting to see now what's going to happen. Now what's going to happen.
Well,
so
I also love the idea. I mean, the premise of the book is that Nick Bellamy was this guy who in the 60s and 70s was an enforcer for this mob boss in Vegas. And he could see that the end of the road was coming and he didn't really have a future. His wife had left him with their baby son and he'd found love with another woman, but he saw that there was no real future. So he set up a sting operation where he framed his boss, who got put in jail and made off with a bunch of his money, to set himself up a new life. And now 30 years later, his boss got out of jail and sends his guys after him. Mm-hmm. So I kind of love the idea of the ghosts of the sins of the past coming back to haunt him in the present day. And then he has to go back and find his estranged family and protect them from this guy's revenge as well. So there was a lot of opportunities for juicy character stuff, and Nick has to encounter his now grown son, who hates him, of course, for abandoning him, and who is pretty much the embodiment of what Nick finds disgusting about the modern era. You know, he's sort of a, technology-focused guy who likes his iPhone and, you know, is what Nick would consider a wuss because he grew up playing soccer in games where they didn't keep score, so nobody's feelings would get hurt. And, you know, it was just fun to play all the character stuff off like that.
See, this could be a movie, in my opinion. This would make a great movie. I really do think that.
I wouldn't mind that at all.
Well, you have screenwriting experience, so...
Yeah, my wife and I have written for Law & Order SVU. We've written for a show called Numbers. We've written a bunch of movie scripts, some of which were made, some of which were not. So we do have one foot in that world.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to see that happen. That would be a fun movie.
I think so, too.
Well, I just worry a little bit because you've got an older main character. These days, everybody wants to have a teen or a 20-something to be the lead. And I don't know whether people would go for that, but I would.
Well, you know, you've got something like The Expendables. You could make the character like a Vietnam veteran instead of a Korean War veteran and still have mostly the same story. And, you know, I think it could work.
I know you're a busy guy and you've got other projects that you're working on. Do you want to talk about some of them, at least what we can find out about?
Yeah, well, I write Angel and Faith monthly for Dark Horse and Joss Whedon, which is great. Working with him, obviously, is an amazing opportunity. And my collaborator, Rebecca Isaacs, is one of the most talented young artists on the scene. She's just amazing. And the Whedonverse fandom has been very welcoming. I've made no secret of the fact that I hadn't really watched the shows until Scott Elliott, Dark Horse, approached me about the job, and of course I got caught up and loved all the shows, but I'm not a longtime fan, but they haven't held that against me, and they've been terrific, so I really enjoy doing that. And I'm working on a video game, can't really say much about it. Last year I wrote the Captain America video game that came out, so this is my second one, and co-writing 3 issues of Amazing Spider-Man with Dan Slott, who I've worked with, of course, before on The Initiative. We always enjoy working together when we have the opportunity. And my run on X-Men Legacy comes to an end with issue 275. So I hope people will check that out. We're sort of wrapping up the character journey Rogue has been on that Mike Carey started her on in his run. And I'm glad that we got to get to the point where, you know, we can resolve that and set her up for her new role in Uncanny Avengers starting soon. And I think that's all I am at liberty to talk about at the moment.
Well, I hope you get to be involved with the Marvel Now event that's coming.
Well, at the moment, there are no plans. I mean, I'm doing stuff for Marvel. Oh, one thing I can discuss, I'm writing the Astonishing X-Men annual, which tells the story of Northstar's honeymoon.
Wow.
And, you know, some bad guys start targeting friends and family of the Astonishing X-Men, and this happens right when Northstar is on his honeymoon, and that's not terribly convenient. It sort of explores the premise from Northstar's husband of when you marry someone, you also marry their whole family, and in this case, the family is the X-Men. What does that mean? So that's been kind of fun, and I'm working with David Baldion, my artist from X-Men Legacy, so that'll be cool. But yeah, so I'm still doing stuff for Marvel, and nothing ongoing at the moment, although we're always talking, and I have a good relationship with them. Just my exclusive recently ended, and so I'm, you know, looking around for other stuff too. I'm going to do more. I have a creator-owned miniseries with Derek Robertson called Power of Attorney. I actually started it a couple of years ago, and Derek's now getting back into it after working on some other stuff. So that'll be coming out, and I have a book at Avatar Press called Absolution. The first season, I call it, came out a year or two ago, and I am almost done with season 2, and we're talking about a season 3, so that is all coming soon. So, you know, it's kind of fun because this is a great time for creator-owned material. I think that the retailers and readers are more open to trying a new concept that might not have a character they're familiar with. If it's, you know, from a creator whose work they've liked, or even if it's just a concept they think is cool. So I definitely want to do more of that, so that's exciting.
See, I think the story is more important now than the character.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Because, you know, a long time people, if it was Captain America, even if it was terrible Captain America, you know, I would buy it because I liked the character. And I would sit there and I would groan by the end of the comic, oh, this is terrible. Why did they do this? But I think now what's happening is there's so many good stories to be told and so many things that are happening out there. I mean, like Walking Dead's a good example of something that came out of nowhere and is just like a big hit. Mm-hmm. So I think like the stuff that you're doing, telling good stories that are character-based and things like that, that's the way to go in my opinion. So I'm looking forward to all of it. I think it's great stuff.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, me too. I mean, you know, I love working on company-owned characters. I mean, I've had a few early conversations with a publisher about working on a character that I've loved since I was like 6 years old, so that's always fun. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, it's always fun to create something new and stretch your muscles and say, okay, what story do I want to tell? And if there's an artist you want to work with, what do they want to draw? What story do they want to tell? How would we work best together? So that's what makes comics great, is it is one of the most pure, like, for instance, writing a novel is a solo experience. Working on a movie is a collaborative experience or a TV show, but it's collaboration between you and like hundreds of other people. Whereas comics, what I love about it is it's collaborative. So it's people bringing their talent together, but it's a manageable number. Mm-hmm. It's writer, artist, penciler, inker, or penciler slash inker, colorist, letterer, editors. And it's a fairly small number of people. So what you get is something that hopefully is a whole that's greater than the sum of its parts, but also has the distinct voices of the creative people involved shining through. So that's what I love about comics.
Well, I've got two quick questions for you to wrap up. Number one, you're doing both creator-owned and franchise characters. If you could choose a franchise character that you haven't written for or that you haven't written for very much, which one would you like to write?
You know, I have been a fan of Godzilla for many, many, many years.
Really?
So I would love to do a Godzilla story. I wrote Deadshot for DC. It was my first work in comics, but I'd love to do the Suicide Squad. And I've always loved Commandy, the Jack Kirby character at DC. I'd love to do that. I've been lucky at Marvel. I've gotten to write pretty much every Marvel character I wanted to, like Devil Dinosaur and, you know, pretty much everybody. So that's been really cool.
Okay, last question. You've gotten to write with or work with Joss Whedon and Neil Adams. Is there anybody else that you would like to write with? Now, we talk about dreaming big and stuff like that. Is there any creator that you would like to work with that you haven't yet?
Yeah, well, I think I mentioned this before. I would just love to work with George Perez because I'm such a fan. And I've met him a few times, and he's just a really lovely, lovely man. But I'm just such a fan of his work growing up reading Avengers and New Teen Titans and Wonder Woman and just all the great stuff he's done. I'm just in awe of his talent, and I would love to work with him if I ever get the opportunity.
Okay, because he's my favorite artist. I mean, I love his stuff the most. I've actually spoken with him a couple times at cons and stuff like that, so he's great.
Yeah, terrific.
Well, I sure appreciate talking with you, Chris.
Sure, thanks.
And much success. Boy, keep up the great stuff. I'm going to keep buying and giving you all the money I can.
I like that. I like to hear that.
So keep at it, and well, hopefully we'll get to talk with you again sometime in the future.
That would be great. Thanks so much for having me on.
Thank you.
All right.
On May 30th, 2011, DC Comics announced the historic renumbering of all their superhero titles, and the internet broke in half.
No. No. It's not true. That's impossible.
Critics and naysayers abounded. Confusion reigned across fandom.
What'll I do? What'll I do? What an unusual view.
Not to mention the first reactions to the Supergirl costume.
I hated her so much. Flames on the side of my face, heaving breaths.
But then the books actually hit, and opinions.
He likes it. Hey, Mikey.
Opinions began to change. The New 52 Adventures of Superman is a monthly podcast where John Wilson,
J. David Weider,
and
Michael Kaiser
take a look at each of the adventures of Superman and his family of characters in Action Comics.
You know the deal, Metropolis. Treat people right or expect a visit from me.
The Superman who appeared 6 months ago could hurdle skyscrapers and toss trucks around. Now it's faster, now it's stronger. How soon before it can't be stopped?
Superboy.
If resolving a situation for him is going to get me out from under these people once and for all, that's a small price to pay for freedom.
Release the Superboy.
Supergirl.
Okay. Giant metal creatures. Falling from the sky. Speaking in clicks and beeps. Father would love this dream.
And Superman.
You could do so much good. We could do so much good.
I am doing good, Lois.
Clark's such a loner. Never really lets anyone get close to him.
The New 52 Adventures of Superman. Available the first of every month on iTunes and at new52superman.libsyn.com.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky, it's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's Wayne's Comic Review.
Strange visitor from another planet who came to Earth with powers and abilities far beyond those of mortal men. Who can change the course of mighty rivers, bend steel in his bare hands. And now, another exciting episode.
It's time for this week's comic reviews. The book of the week for me was Rocketeer Cargo of Doom No. 1, which is written by Mark Waid and has art by Chris Samnee. It follows in the best tradition of Dave Stevens doing this character, which I really have loved over the years. I like the retro look of him and the retro costume, all kinds of good things. I like the stories too. It's adventure in the classic way, and I like that. So I'm really happy that they're getting an ongoing book out from IDW. Previously, we've had two miniseries that have had named creators, and those have been wonderful things. But I just wanted an ongoing story and a regular comic to go, so I'm very happy it's out. I'm a big fan of Mark Waid, as you know if you've listened to this podcast in the past, and he can spin a yarn in any time period about pretty much any hero with the best of him, in my opinion. Now, currently he's also working on Steed and Mrs. Peel for Boom Studios and taking over a Hulk book for Marvel Now. So this guy does get around. There's a new character in the book by the name of Sally, a female pilot, who has to defend herself against Mr. Feeney, an inspector who wants to look at more than the plane she's flying. If you get my drift, there's a wonderful sequence with Cliff in his Rocketeer outfit talking with Sally, which leads to a very interesting revelation. Of course, we see Cliff's girlfriend, and we see some old familiar faces, and it's great to have them back. And this book is really true to the time period, and that's not always easy to accomplish, and it's difficult to make an audience in today to enjoy that. So hats off to the creators for that. This book is Daring Do at its very best, with Waid crafting a fast-moving, character-driven story that has Cliff and his one true love bouncing off other folks, just like the best creators do in these classic comics. Samnee's art is clear and dynamic, matching the script, so I was yanked in immediately and not released until the very last panel. I think Mr. Stevens would continue to be proud of what IDW is doing with Rocketeer. So where's that next issue already? I'll be talking with Gianluca Glaser about Rocketeer in a few minutes in the news and previews section. This week's New 52 reviews include thoughts about the books that came out this week. Batman The Dark Knight No. 12 has Scarecrow working on Batman's psyche. I also really enjoyed The Flash No. 12, in which the Scarlet Speedster takes on Glider. Teen Titans has Wonder Girl facing Red Robin and Superboy. Next, I enjoyed Superman as Dan Jurgens wraps up his latest run with the Man of Steel. The Savage Hawkman keeps impressing me, even though Mr. Liefeld will be leaving soon, as we're going to discuss very shortly. Justice League Dark is going great guns with Jeff Lemire doing the writing. Also, Green Lantern New Guardians No. 12 may show us the end of the team. The Fury of Firestorm continues to be a strong read, and All-Star Western has Jonah Hex fighting the baddies with his girlfriend, quote-unquote, Tallulah. Voodoo number 12 features what's called the final battle, and iVampire has Stormwatch making a guest appearance. Fun reads all. Other books worth getting this week included Before Watchmen, Dr. Manhattan number 1 from DC, Brilliant number 4, Super Crooks number 4, and Venom number 23 from Marvel. Star Trek Ongoing number 12 comes from IDW, Invincible 94 and Super Dinosaur number 13 come from Image Comics and Robert Kirkman. Kevin Smith Bionic Man number 12 is from Dynamite, and the always excellent Hero Worship number 2 from Arcana is out. And those are the books that came out this week.
And it's time for this week's news and previews. And with me, as always, is Gianluca Glazer. How are you doing today, Gianluca?
I'm doing very well.
Good, good. So what news have you got for us this week?
Quite a lot of interesting news this week. It's been a busy week. Blue Water recently announced they've severed ties with distribution through Diamond.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? I'm fascinated by that.
It is. The move was made after Diamond canceled orders on several recent Blue Water solicitations that did not meet Diamond's minimum sales threshold.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the reason for that. Future distribution to both consumers and comic retailers will be handled by a company called Comic Flea Market.
Mm-hmm.
Never heard of it before until now. The books are going to be printed on a demand basis.
Mm-hmm.
And Comic Flea Market will sell to comic retailers at discounts similar to those used by Diamond.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised by that. I wonder, because I know that Diamond has set those thresholds and some people were very unhappy with it.
Yeah.
I guess what's going to happen is more and more companies are going to pull away as they find that Diamond can't meet their needs.
Well, it does say something, too. I'm sure it's not those bio books. Those biography books usually are big sellers for them,
mm-hmm.
depending on the person, but... Yeah, they did a lot of original series, too, and I guess the order numbers for that were pretty low.
Mm-hmm.
They've also kind of got a bad reputation for paying people and having subpar artwork.
Yeah, we've talked about that in the past.
Yeah.
I'm just curious about it, because they also indicate that they're going to go more digital, which will be something interesting to see.
Yeah. Remember when we talked about Rob Liefeld doing 3 books for the DC News 52?
Yeah.
Didn't seem that long ago, did it?
No.
No. Well, Rob Liefeld has quit DC.
Yeah.
His last issues are going to be the 0 issues in September. So after September, no more Rob Liefeld. He tweeted the news. You always hear like the bridge burning stuff through Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
He tweeted, "I just finished sending my thank yous to DC personnel. Officially got off the DC 52 treadmill this morning." Scott Clark will be replacing me for Deathstroke. Mara will continue to work on Grifter. I had a great time at DC.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in what DC is doing, but had to preserve my sanity. I walked off all 3 books. Can't wait to see any attempts to spin. I have every email. The zeros are my last issues. Thanks for all the love. This is the 4th time I quit in the last 4 months. This time it will stick. I put Justin Jordan on Deathstroke and Grifter in a heartbeat. Never thought the Image section of my book would be topped. This last year was a humdinger. The DC 52 chapters will top all of it. I guess he's talking about writing about this particular experience.
Mm-hmm.
Reasons are the same as everyone else's that you hear. I lasted a few months longer than I thought possible. Massive indecision. Last minute, and I mean last minute changes that alter everything. Editor pissing contest, no thanks. Last week, my editor said, quote, "Early on, we had a lot of indie talent that weren't used to rewrites and changes. Made it hard." No, it's you.
Well, I know the New 52 has been a struggle. One of the problems that they have is that they're very devoted to staying on schedule, and some people are very, some artists and some writers and stuff like that are not all that schedule-oriented.
Right.
So I don't know if Mr. Liefeld's in that category or not.
There have been guys like John Rosen who had quit, and he mentioned about how, even though he was the writer of the book, that the editor and the artists were just as much in control as he was. Or more so, even.
Uh-huh.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's. I guess the New 52 is kind of a... It's going to be funny to see that.
It has the editorial hand in it, because the company wants it the way they want it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the thing. If you're a company guy, you've got to follow the... thing. If you're used to working for Image, and which is a little freer in their abilities to do things, than the other company.
They were the Image founders, but...
Yeah.
Top Cow?
Yeah, those guys. See, they're a little more free as to what you do on a schedule.
Yeah.
But it's going to be tough to see. Going forward, it's going to be interesting. But, you know, I still believe in what DC's doing. I think it's going over well. It's just sort of difficult to live up to what they want. So it would probably be better to do less than more at this point. And he was doing three books, which I'm sure just drove him insane.
Yes. Well, there is some good news for Rob, though. Feature film based on Rob Liefeld's Bloodstrike is in development.
Hmm.
The original comic series was an early Image release beginning in 1993 with Liefeld's Extreme Studios. Liefeld has altered the concept for the film to feature super soldiers that have been given vampire blood.
Interesting.
Yes. Other big news, Superman is hooking up with Wonder Woman.
Yeah. You know, I saw that there. I was always reminded of the notion that if Superman had intercourse with Lois Lane, she would have been dead as a result of it.
Yeah, that was from Mallrats, I remember.
Yeah, well, I can understand the Wonder Woman thing a lot better because she's as sturdy as he is, so they can do that sort of stuff. I'm always reminded of Smallville when Lana got superpowers and she and Clark got it on, and they thought it was an earthquake happening in Smallville. I wasn't sure if DC would like that, but I guess based on this story, I guess they do.
Yes. Well, Entertainment Weekly broke the news that Superman and Wonder Woman will begin a long-term relationship in Justice League number 12.
Mm.
Writer Jeff Johns hinted that an event impacting the Justice League will cause the couple to seek solace in each other and form a serious relationship.
What do you think about that?
It's interesting. I don't follow the reboots of Superman in action, so I don't exactly know what the deal is with Superman and Lois Lane at this point.
Well, they're kind of separated in that sense. Lois Lane has a boyfriend.
Oh, well then go for it, Superman.
Yeah, well, the two of them have had their fling in the past, so this is not like it's something brand new out of the blue. But on the other hand, those people who like Superman and Lois Lane are very unhappy. I've read several things online where people are cursing and swearing at DC for doing this kind of thing. But
yeah, people do that for anything. So
yeah, anything that varies from the pattern.
And you know what? You get a haircut, do you?
Yeah.
People like.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, there's still people screaming about his costume and stuff. So.
Right.
The thing is, this will never be forever. I mean, they'll eventually part ways and stuff like that. He'll go back to Lois.
Yes, it's just like several people get costume changes that don't stick, like Spider-Man, and several people die, which never sticks.
Mm-hmm.
So, Black Kiss Volume 2 is a book by Howard Chaykin. It's a series by Howard Chaykin. If you live in the UK, though, you're not going to get it due to customs issues.
Wow.
Diamond UK issued this email to retailers, or this letter to retailers. Retailers will be aware that the first issue of Howard Chaykin's Black Kiss Volume 2 was rather explicit compared to other comics distributed by Diamond UK. We at Diamond have now had the opportunity to review the second issue, and the explicitness has not diminished at all! Exclamation point.
Wow.
In fact, there are scenes depicted that may fall foul of UK customs regulations on the importing of indecent and obscene material. Consequently, Diamond has taken the decision to not distribute any further issues of Black Kiss No. 2 in the UK.
Wow.
Had Diamond UK continued to import this title and encountered problems with customs, it could have been a knock-on effect on the timely distribution of all titles in the UK, a situation wanted by no one. All orders for Black Kiss Volume 2, No. 2, along with Black Kiss Volume 2, No. 1, have been canceled by Diamond UK. So, interesting stuff there.
You know what will happen is people will start shipping them
sure
separately, and that's how they'll get over there.
It can go overseas, just not through Diamond.
Right.
So,
like Amazon.
You know.
Yeah, Amazon or things like that.
Maybe Comic Flea Market.
Yeah.
May step up to the plate.
Yeah.
All right. You know how good I am with names, right?
Well, they never give us pronunciation guides, so
no,
we never
don't.
Know.
Well, there's a certain actor. He was in Lost. He was in the season 3 of Lost.
Oh, yeah.
2 and 3. Mm-hmm. He was in G.I. Joe Rise of Cobra. Mm-hmm. I remember him most for playing the character Adebisi in HBO's prison series Oz.
Mm-hmm.
Adewale will play the dual role of Algrim the Strong and Curse in Thor the Dark World.
Yeah, isn't that something?
Yeah, so he's got way too many...
He was in Lost. He's got that, I think that's an African name, and that's something that's
yes,
a little tough to... Sometimes these things are difficult to...
Like the one actor, Desmond... Digimon. I'm a big Rocketeer fan, so this is good news for me, but Disney's Alan Horn is putting a reboot of Dave Stevens' Rocketeer into development.
Yeah, what do you think about that?
I think it's good timing. The first movie came out in 1991. It's been a while. It wasn't a box office success either. As much as it is probably critically acclaimed and well-liked, it bombed at the box office. People didn't get it. Back in 91, there wasn't an internet. You didn't have this big geek culture. Dave Stevens was probably still finishing up the second Rocketeer story. So probably a lot of people didn't even know what this whole thing was about. But I think now you have a bigger appreciation for geek culture and comics. Yeah, there wasn't like a lot of successful comic book movie adaptations back then as well. So I think the time is right.
Well, you know, they've got the comics from IDW, and they're doing real well.
They are.
You know, and the first one just came out, the Cargo of Doom.
Series, yeah.
Yeah, it's written by Mark Waid. So I would say this is a good time for that. And, you know, retro works at times, and I like the character and I like the costume. And
I love it.
Yeah, the books have been successfully translating that and doing that, and especially in this era where everybody wants to look forward and we're interested in the future, where they can actually go back to the past and tell a good story. I would say this is a good time to do it. We'll see how it turns out. Everything's going to depend on how the script and the movie goes, but we'll see.
Yeah. So, bad news for films, though. The 3-film and TV adaptation of Stephen King's The Dark Tower series has once again been dropped, this time by Warner Brothers. Ron Howard and Brian Grazer's Image Entertainment were to produce, along with Stephen King, with Howard to direct and Russell Crowe to star in. So it was dropped by Universal last year. Doesn't seem likely that anyone's going to pick it up after this most recent drop.
I'm kind of surprised because Stephen King is still a high power name.
Yes. It seems like it was too big of an investment for Warner Brothers. Too expensive.
Now, they were talking about both movie and television
series.
So maybe that's the trick. If they could pair it back to one or the other, maybe a studio would be more interested or a network would be more interested.
Yeah, it was supposed to be a trilogy of films, and that can either work very well or work very badly. And it's a lot of money to invest.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a lot of money to put into stuff.
Yeah.
And, of course, special effects and stuff like that, too. Although, it just seems like the undead and supernatural and spiritual type stuff is going over right now. So this would be a time to do it. It may be that Mr. King wants to take home a huge chunk of the money that would be made, and that's a problem for the studios, too.
Could be, yeah. The Boys, the book by Garth Ennis, is ending with issue number 72 in November. There was supposed to be a film adaptation. Columbia had been developing it for a while, and then they dropped it recently. But the film is back on.
Oh.
So apparently Paramount has picked it up, according to director Adam McKay.
Interesting.
Very interesting. That would be really good. I know back when Columbia was developing it, at a certain point, I think they even had decided that, Simon Pegg was too old to play Hughie. Even though his likeness is in all the comic books. It'll be interesting to see how this works.
Yeah, we'll see how it turns out. This is the time for any kind of thing that's genre-related to move forward. So, especially with Avengers doing well and Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah.
You know, being a successful trilogy and all this stuff.
It's a fun series. And it's a big satire. I don't think it's definitely not for kids.
No.
It's not going to reach as wide an audience as The Avengers, but it's fun. Adults will like it. It's got a really nice, dark sense of humor. Here's hoping that happens sometime.
Yeah, that'd be good.
And that's it for the news.
Yeah, you've hit all the high points that I had in mind, too. So.
Oops.
Well, that's fine. Sometimes I'd rather that you point them out because I know these things and it's fun. Like, particularly that Blue Water thing is the thing that fascinates me. That's a very daring move for them, and Blue Water's not known for daring moves, so.
Yeah, I think it was probably done out of necessity. Devil's Due had a similar falling out with Diamond a few years ago, and then they just recently got back with Diamond.
Mm-hmm.
Their reason was, I believe they thought Diamond had lost several of their books. And Diamond was canceling, like, their orders as well, too, because their orders were just not meeting the threshold.
Mm-hmm. The whole comics industry, I just wonder if we're on the cusp of a change, a big change.
Yeah.
You know?
A lot of people are going digital only.
Yeah. It's funny, if you look at the previews website, they now, if something's available digitally on the same day that the paper copy comes out, they'll put like parentheses DIG on it so that you can tell that this is also available digitally. So I find that interesting. I wonder a year from now whether we'll still be talking about this kind of stuff or not. It's just an interesting time to be a comics fan. It just really is.
Yeah, it is.
So, okay. Well, since that takes care of the news, how about what are you looking forward to in the comics?
Sure. Next week, August 29th, I am looking forward to the following titles. Dark Horse has a couple interesting ones. Axe Cop, President of the World, number 2.
Mm-hmm.
If you haven't read Axe Cop, it's really funny. It's drawn by a talented guy, but his younger half-brother, who's like not even in his teens, mm-hmm. is the one that's like writing it. So... It's very absurd. Dark Horse also has The Goon, issue number 41.
Mm-hmm.
Another long-running series there.
Mm-hmm.
Over in DC land, in 2 weeks they're going to have the start of the issue Zeros. Mm-hmm. But until then, August 29th, we have Before Watchmen, Minutemen number 3,
mm-hmm.
written and drawn by Darwin Cook.
Mm-hmm.
Detective Comics gets an annual.
Mm-hmm.
That's coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And then over on Archaea's side, if you got some money to spend, they got some leather-bound editions of two of their classic titles, Mouse Guard, Legend of the Guard,
ooh.
And the Eisner-winning Return of the Dapper Men.
Hard. Uh-huh.
They're not cheap, though. The Mouse Guard one is $40, and mm-hmm. Return of the Dapper Men is $50.
Wow.
And they've been out for a while, but if you want your books leather-bound...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Mouse Guard one tempts me. I'm a big fan of that series, so I don't remember if I actually ordered that or not. I probably did, which means I'll have money to pay next week.
Yes. Some really good titles coming out from Boom Studios. Their very popular Adventure Time, Marceline and the Scream Queens, number 1, comes out again in the second printing.
Mm-hmm.
Hellraiser number 17 continues. It's being written or co-written by, what's his name? Clive Barker.
Mm-hmm.
If you enjoy the old classic Marvel Hellraiser comics, they have the Hellraiser Masterpiece Volume 2 collection coming out.
Mm-hmm.
I got the Volume 1 when that came out like a year or so ago, and that was very good.
Oh.
Since that time, they decided to release them as like little comic format. So this one collects those comics that had come out since then.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Sam Humphrey's series, Higher Earth, number 4, goes on sale.
Mm-hmm.
Hypernaturals gets a third printing.
Mm-hmm.
That comes out. The very last Irredeemable trade paperback, Volume 10, goes on sale.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is one that you'll be excited about. Steed and Mrs. Peel, ongoing issue number 0.
Yeah.
That's written by Mark Waid.
Yeah. Looking forward to that. Always great stuff.
Mm-hmm. And I believe this is the final issue, but Valen the Outcast, number 8.
Yeah, I'm so sorry to see that end. I just thought that was a great book. It was fun.
It was. You interviewed Michael Allen Nelson, the writer.
Yeah, yeah. The thing about it was that it was very much of an adventure. It's an adventure, and you don't get adventure very often in comics these days.
No, you don't.
Like this. So, no, I'm still disappointed about that.
Yeah. Undead, warrior king.
Yeah.
Just, he gets cursed and... becomes a zombie.
Yeah.
Hopefully things work out for him.
Yeah, well, if he knew it was coming, I'm sure he wrapped it up. But, you know, 8 issues was, I guess, was a good run.
Yeah.
More would have been better, but what do we know?
So, darn it. We'll have a trade for it soon, for the whole I'm sure.
That would be nice.
And then Vanguard Productions, they work with a lot of big-name talent like Jim Steranko. If you got $25 for a hardcover, they have Neil Adams' Monsters.
Yeah, that's something. They had a paperback version of that a while back, and I bought that. It was a good book. It was fun to see Mr. Adams draw monsters instead of superheroes, and he does a good job with it.
Yeah, so that is it for me.
Okay.
I left out certain ones that I know you were going to...
Yeah, there's some I'll mention too. So we'll go the other direction. I'll come up from... Dynamite has The Warlord of Mars, Deja Thoris, number 14, which is great fun. I always enjoy that book. There is also Sixth Gun from Oni Press, really the only ongoing book they have. And a good one too. It's coming to an end before too very long, so I'm sorry to see that. There's also Lord of the Jungle, number 7.
Yes.
Which is terrific. Oh, that's such a good book. Green Hornet, number 27. A lot of these are Dynamite books, so I guess I'm buying a lot of Dynamite these days. Speaking of which, Bionic Woman, number 3. I wondered where that was. That seems to have fallen behind, so I'll be glad to see that come out. I like that book a lot. From Marvel, this is not a big week for me from Marvel. Goodness, I don't think they have anything for me. So we'll have to pass on Marvel this time. As far as Image has Walking Dead calendar for 2013 is already coming out, so that's a good thing. From the regular comics, there's a second printing of Chu Secret Agent Poyo, number 1. But I've been printing that a lot lately. There's Guardian of the Globe trade paperback. And then there's a second printing for Invincible 92, which is going real well, heading for number 100, so that'll be good. Then we get to IDW has Lock and Key Grindhouse One Shot. I like Lock and Key a lot. That's a good book.
Yeah.
Very surprising. Trio number 4 by Mr. Byrne. That's out. You're a big Byrne fan. The first one was enough of that for me, but we'll see what happens going forward. Speaking of Arvid Nelson stuff, now last week you mentioned it, but it's only showing up in my stuff this week. Rex Mundi Omnibus Trade Paperback Volume 1 for $24.99.
Oh, okay.
That's finally showing up, I guess, on my side of things, but I got to get that. There's also Angel of Faith, which is written by Christos Gage, who I interviewed previously in this podcast. That's kind of fun. And from DC, of course, American Vampire, number 30, Aquaman, number 12. They're reprinting Batman and Robin, number 10 and 11, so I guess that's good.
Yeah.
Batman Beyond Unlimited, number 7 is good. You mentioned Detective's Annual, but there's also a Flash Annual.
Yes, I wanted to leave that one for you.
Yeah, Green Lantern Annual, and there's also a Superman Annual. So they're picking up on the old summer tradition of having annuals, which I think is kind of cool.
Yeah.
Then there is Justice League number 12. Then there is National Comics Looker. We had that previous issue of National Comics with Jeff Lemire doing characters. So this time it'll be Looker, who we know way back when from being in The Outsiders. So I'll see what they do with her. Phantom Lady number 1, based on the old 1940s character. That'll be something fun to see.
Hmm.
Then there's Young Justice, which is based on the TV show, which I like. Great animated series.
Yeah.
Anything else we should talk about?
Not that I know of. I know next week we'll be talking about the Zero issues for DC.
Right.
Looking forward to that. They got quite a number of those coming out.
Yeah, cool covers, too. Every time I see a picture of the covers, I like them, so I'm fascinated by that.
Yeah.
Okay, and on that note, we'll come to a close with news and previews. We'll talk with you again next week.
Cool. Bye, everybody.
And that's a wrap for this episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. In future episodes, I will have interviews with Joe Harris and Phil Hester, both of whom are working on Legend of the Dark Knight digital comics. So be sure to listen in. But until next time, keep reading your comics.